Hi.
How's it going?
K.
K. K.
K. Just K.
Just K.
Just K. Not
good.
Not 4K. Just K.
Oh, God. NAB's next week, man. It's all you're ever going to hear is 4K this, 4K that.
I'm fine with that. What I really am hoping for from NAB is, remember last year's NAB, or I think it was NAB, where the Foundry announced that they were going to be making a non-commercial version of Nuke available, and it still says sometime in 2015.
Was that NAB last year, or was it SIGGRAPH?
Well, it might have been SIGGRAPH, but I mean, in any event, it's getting to be a sort of an Apple level of beginning of 2015 here. Maybe they're planning it for the big reveal at NAB.
That's certainly a possibility. I mean, but look, it took them a year and a half, so two NABs and a half to get Nuke Studio out the door. So that's predictable. But there are people doing that. I just saw the email today that the base light for Nuke plugin is officially out of beta and officially for sale. So our beta licenses are going to die in 30 days. So I had been testing that plugin for a while now, and I have to say, I don't have to fill in the rest of that for our audience, do I?
Sure. But I forget what is base light again? Isn't that just like a color, like DI kind of color space processing kind of thingy?
It is a color grading package. It is a full DI suite. Basically, you know, it's one of the big ones where you can have the control panels and do your entire color process and conform through there. But they built a plugin for, I think they had the Avid and Final Cut ones for a little while now, but they ported it to Nuke as well. So it's a very nice suite of color correction tools within Nuke.
Better than Magic Bullet?
Well, considering Magic Bullet does not work in Nuke, yes.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. But NAB, it's going to be a big year. Mm-hmm. Woo! It's going to be so many Ks out there.
Every kiss begins with K. But for the NABs this year, is it in Hollywood at the Paramount backlot like it usually is, or do they go somewhere else?
You're thinking of CineGear. This is the one that is always in Las Vegas, at the Las Vegas Convention Center.
I'm getting my
your trade shows,
my stupid
mixed up
cinematography trade shows confused.
It's more than just cinematography, my friend. It's all encompassing.
Uh-huh.
Every aspect of television and film production, broadcasting, and all that stuff.
Yeah, right. Nobody cares.
Lots of people care. They get a couple hundred thousand people every year.
Okay.
It's like CES, but for nerds with cameras.
Mm-hmm. That's why I hear about it on all the podcasts.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because there are a ton of in-depth filmmaker podcasts.
And I see it on Twitter like crazy, just like nonstop.
Oh, you will, my friend. Just mm-hmm. wait till next week. You're going to have to line up the new mute filters.
So I take it, since you are not working for a company that is sending you, that you're not going to NAB.
You know, I was going to hitch a ride with some folks and then crash on a spare bed in a hotel room, because the conference is free just to walk around on the show floor. But I think I'm going to pass, because I would be stuck there for, I think, 4 days, and I can't do 4 days of a Vegas convention. That's just too much.
Can't you just drive yourself?
I could, but that probably wouldn't be a wise idea with my vehicle. It's old.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that was exciting.
Nope. Nope. So I'm going to be sitting here and reading everything on Twitter, and then just waiting for my Apple Watch to show up in the mail.
You should live blog it.
I should live blog the event I'm not going to be at.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah. I'm sure they're going to have like some streaming keynotes and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. The Foundry's already. I think they sent out like one of their little newsletter things saying they'll have a couple live keynotes for announcements here and there.
Yeah. Every 2 seconds. I started following them a little while ago. I realized I should probably do that so that I actually, you know things. And so I followed them, and I noticed that they're basically just nonstop tweeting their 20% off discount, which they keep calling cross grade, which just irritates me. Stop calling it cross grade. You're not going to make cross grade happen.
Well, it's partly a cross grade. You have to have the other stuff to get the discount.
It literally is a form. You just say you have it. It's, they don't.
Are you sure you don't have to send them a license or something?
No, you don't have to. You don't have to cut off a box top or anything. It's
mail in your UPCs.
Yes. For listeners who are not familiar with what we were discussing, there's a 20% off discount for Nuke if you have another compositing package like Adobe After Effects, etc., or Fusion, etc. But the it doesn't really, it's not a strenuous requirement that you are going to be screened for. Not that 20% off is an enormous discount once you figure out how much you still have to pay.
It's still a pretty substantial discount. I think that's when I bought it on one of those like end of year specials with a large discount, which I think then after that I did sort of like a standard upgrade to a larger I can't remember what package or something, but by the time I was done paying for all of the apps, it basically came out to the equivalent of one app, and I was happy about that. So their discounts are useful if you need this kind of stuff.
Yeah, but at 20%, you're still paying what, $4,000 to get your foot in the door with the lowest of the low with just Nuke, not Nuke X or Nuke Studio.
Yeah, that is an expensive door entry thingy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people were complaining about how much watches cost.
Yeah, I know. Can you imagine? Oh, man, I would love to pay $350 for the application I use to get my job done.
Oh, that would be amazing. Because, I mean, I would honestly just pay for it, even though I don't do it any of it at home, just because I would just like to have a copy. Because sometimes, like, this is going to sound stupid, but sometimes, you know, you want to do, like, a little photo editing or messing around with something. And it's just your brain thinks in terms of, oh, well, I could just roto this and then, you know, track this on and do this thing. And it's just like, oh, this would be so easy if I could just fire up Nuke. And then you're like, don't have it. Never mind.
And then you open Photoshop and a single tear rolls down your cheek.
Pixel Mator. Thank you.
Don't you have the Creative Cloud stuff?
Yeah, but Pixel Mator is kind of just fast and doesn't get in my way. So I just open that one instead.
Yep. No, I try and do as much everything, photo, video, all that stuff in Nuke because, yeah, my brain does think that way too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Dan, I have a callback to some of our earlier episodes. I have a unusual drink with me today.
Oh, is it a juice? Is it cold pressed?
It involved a fruit at some point.
it's a cider?
I don't. Yes. But it is a pineapple cider.
B, that's possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I saw it next to the pear, and pear makes a good cider. And I was just like, you know, I'm going to record a podcast. I should probably have something ridiculous. So I decided to buy it.
He's trying to find the most acidic beverage you could possibly find.
Well, it's not even. Well, I don't know yet. It's. It has the aroma of Monster Energy drink. So there's that. Let's see what it tastes like.
Which is to say, like, sweet tarts and antifreeze?
Yes. Literally. That would be the olfactory notes there. Let's see what it tastes like. God. Do you want to guess what it tastes like?
I'm going to guess it tastes like battery acid.
No. It's not actually that acidic. It just does tastes like Monster Energy drink.
Are you sure you didn't just buy a Monster Energy drink that somebody told you was artisanal pineapple juice?
No, it came in a bottle that was sealed with a cap that said Ace Pineapple Cider. Now, maybe there was an accident at the bottling plant and
somebody spilled their Monster Energy drink into the machine.
Mm-hmm. They're just like, whoops-a-daisy, I guess we have to label all these pineapple now. Because nobody will believe this came from an actual fruit.
It's like that time Ed Norton bled into that one like soda bottle, and he had to like stop the assembly line so people wouldn't drink his blood and then get like Hulk disease or whatever it was.
Oh yeah. Sorry, I was trying to remember that.
Yeah,
filed that movie away somewhere, not easily accessible.
In the refuse bin?
It was in offline storage. I had to use the tape robot to go get it.
Does the place you work use tape as an offline storage?
I don't know if my current employer does, but I know that my former one of my former employers did anyways. Because it is the best way to store a lot of stuff. It's just not fast.
So. Yeah. It is weird, though, just like the idea that the best way to store this stuff is just these ridiculous, like, 8-track-looking cartridges. And then if you're fancy enough, you do have the robot that can go retrieve them and then pull data back off of it. Mm-hmm. But then you got the database you got to keep track of and make sure that doesn't get screwed up. Otherwise, you have no idea where anything is.
Well, this is exciting. We're off to a really good start.
Yeah.
I like our podcast already. Do we have any news items this week other than NAB and Monster Energy drink and tape robots?
T minus 7 hours till Apple Watches?
I don't care.
I do. I care.
Which one are you buying?
You know, I read a couple of the reviews today, and I was...
Oh, a couple? Where did you find more than one?
The internet, in fact.
Tell me more.
I read Joanna Stern's, the Wall Street Journal one, and Gruber, of course. Well, I skimmed Gruber because it was very long. And Joanna Stern had a video, which was kind of funny. But she was pretty down on the sport band in terms of comfort and functionality. She said it was great for, you know, exercise and all that. But she was really, really a fan of the Milanese Loop there, which is the one I wanted to buy. And then Gruber seemed to think it was the sport bands were quite nice. And I was thinking, well, maybe I'll just go sport band this time to see if the thing is a turd or not. And then you can always get the fancier band later because that I kind of want to have both of those at some point anyway. So maybe I'll just start with the cheaper one and see how it fits into my workflows.
I know that there is a crazy system of some bands aren't available for aftermarket purchase or something. But you check to see that you can do the thing that you are describing, right?
Yeah, the Sport and the Milanese are both purchasable individually. Sports are $50, Milanese is $150, and it's all the same as whether if you buy it in a package or not. So no price difference, just a matter of which one do I want first. And I think I'd probably want the Sport one first just because I am genuinely curious to try and use it for fitness-related things. So it'd probably be useful to have that right at the gate. So we'll see.
Well, obviously, the only thing standing in the way of your fitness regime is
absolutely. I mean, I just can't even start training for this marathon until I have my Apple Watch.
Yes, yes. It's great for things because it's so health kitty.
We are literally the butt of Merlin's, what was that, million-year-old Max FunCon talk he did forever ago?
Maybe. I don't know what you're referring to.
He did a talk at Max FunCon a bunch of years ago, and he was making fun of people, literally saying the things that we're saying. Anywho.
Okay. I was making fun of us for saying the things that we were saying. So
you always make fun of us for saying the things that we're saying.
Yes. It's meta like that, really.
It's angry like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's Joe like that. So you're not even remotely curious how the watch is going to go down. You have zero interest. You're not even going to like cruise over to the Apple Store and just put one on temporarily and see what it feels like.
No, since the moment it was announced, I've had no interest in the product. I and it's not an active hatred or anything. It just doesn't pique my interest.
Not even for historic reasons, because this is a major new product for Apple. And you want to try it out because it's the first one that they've ever done, and just to say that you were there at that time in history when they did that thing.
No, because I've never owned the first anything that Apple has ever made, and it hasn't affected my life one iota. So I'll be fine. My first iPhone was the 3G, so you know.
Mine was too, and I was kind of sad that I didn't have the first one.
I wasn't sad. I was fine with it because, by all accounts, I knew somebody who had the first one. A little limited. So having the second one,
compared to what phone that you had at the time.
Oh, no. The phone I had was but. That was a Motorola Crazer, Verizon branded. So it was red.
Now, was that the slightly more narrow version of the Razer, or is that the one that slid up?
That's the narrow one. The sliding one, I think they had to get rid of because people were having problems with the mechanics of it, but no, it was the little skinnier flip phone one. And it had MP3s that you could listen to if you used your little micro SD card that you could insert by taking off the battery plate on the back and then removing the removable battery. And underneath that would be a little slot that you could put the micro SD in very carefully. And then you put the battery back on top and then you close it. And then you could have access to whatever files you had stored on there. And you could just use the little D-pad thing to click, 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 and then down to whatever it was you wanted to do. Doesn't that sound like the future to you? Really?
No. Mm-hmm. I mean, I recall the days before the iPhone. And my last phone was a Singular 8525, which was an HTC phone. It's one of those big, bulky plastic sliders with a full keyboard and a touchscreen Windows Mobile with a little stylus. And it was just a world of pain. But yes, I did play the few little MP3s that I could squeeze onto the SD card and shove behind the battery as well.
That phone seems very you.
Why?
It's just totally unnecessary.
What do you mean unnecessary? Like, I texted a lot. The full keyboard helped for that.
Oh, it was, did it?
Sure. I mean, compared to texting on literally anything else, texting on a 10-key flip phone is much slower than using a full keyboard and a little slide-out thing like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you just use your slider, and then you take out your stylus, and you'd press. No.
The keyboard were hardware buttons. The stylus was for the touchscreen on the front.
Yeah, but you didn't use your stylus, too, to navigate your menus?
Yeah, but not for typing.
Oh, okay.
No, the typing was all on the hardware keyboard.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's great, because they have a hardware keyboard, and everybody knows that you need to have a hardware keyboard or your phone will fail. In summation, let's get off of this technology topic, because I have no more to say other than blah.
Big week. Big week is all.
It's not even a big week. It's just there's a lot of talking this week. Just,
sure.
I don't weigh that against anything else. It's just air.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm staring at this IMDb page for Total Recall, and there's just three ads for HBO Now that I can see all at one time. So that's another thing that happened this week.
I'm not buying it because I have access to HBO over at Jason's, and I'm a cord cutter in my home proper, but it does not matter enough for me to have it in two places, so I'll be fine just waiting for it to be DVR'd.
But it is nice that now there's an HBO Now and an HBO Go app on my Apple TV, so I'll look forward to clicking the wrong one of those about half the time now.
Yeah, Go Now. But the supposedly the apps are actually internally different, which is something that I had not quite expected. I thought they would also be updating the Go app so that they would just basically be the same. But supposedly they only rolled out the Now version, and then the Go version is just kind of like meh, sitting there.
Did we ever find out if the content in Go and Now is different?
No, but I don't think it is from everything that I've seen. Nobody's said specifically one way or the other, but it does appear that it's supposed to all be HBO content. The one thing I have a question about is whether or not you have access to linear content or if it is just the same on-demand content as Go. Because as you know, as somebody who has HBO and is afraid to cancel your subscription, that you can just turn on the TV and there will be something playing on a channel called HBO, and there will be other channels called HBO with convenient numbers. And you can use those to just see a movie in progress whenever it's on. Some people do that, like you, but the vast majority of people just do on-demand stuff. So naturally, I would kind of just expect there to only be on-demand, and I haven't seen anything about linear content, so maybe there isn't any. So that would be fine, I guess. Nobody's missing out on that. But another big announcement, same day as HBO Now. Same day. Do you know what it was?
No.
CBS. All Access.
CBS is a network?
Yes. CBS All Access. They have their $6.99 a month plan for watching their wonderful CBS content streamed to your home, so you can watch your CSIs and your NCISs and your other CSIs and your other NCISs, and then go back and forth between your CSIs and your NCISs. It is amazing to me that it exists as a product. I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like bundling makes sense. Like, who wants to pay for a standalone CBS application that streams on-demand versions of television for old people? Not to say that the young, hip people of the future aren't totally down with CSI Cyber, which has some of the worst ratings of any CSI show.
Now, is that a real thing or is that a punchline? Because I saw that go by on the internet, but I did not look any further. That's a real thing?
Oh, that is an absolutely, it is a real thing. Go follow Jason Snell's commentary about that. And
I thought he was doing a bit.
Nope, that's not a bit. It's a real thing. the show exists and it is as badly written as he explains. So that's the thing. See, that exists.
I expected it to be a riff on the what's that Scorpion show with the Terminator where they're kind of like young hacker computer people.
Let's not talk about Scorpion.
No, let's not talk about that.
But anyway, that's also on CBS. if you want a procedural crime drama that doesn't take up too much of your brain, then you could pay $6.99 to have access to only that. And like I was saying, this is why bundling makes sense, because it doesn't make any financial sense why you would give them that much money to only get CVS. So if the Apple rumors turn out to be true and there is a package deal of a certain basic cable package, if you will, of all of the stuff put together for one, you know, low monthly fee of $25 or whatever, that would make a lot more sense than paying $6.99 just for CBS. But maybe that's perfect for somebody. I guess it doesn't hurt anything.
Sure. That's mm-hmm. That's fascinating. CBS is still one of those channels you can get over airwaves though, right? So that's kind of peculiar.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of people don't do that though, because
I don't do it. But yeah. Like, if I was interested in cord cutting and I wanted CBS content, I'd probably just get, you know, an HD tuner and do it that way. But that's beside the point.
Well, no, but this is also on demand though. Like, all sure. of the shows are on demand, and you can't do that with your HD TV tuner. When it decodes the signal, you'd have to get your like Ion TV or your set up your Mythbuntu with your Myth TV in it and your Plex servers and your Windows home server administrating all of that, and then, you know, route that through your HDCP verified graphics card that you installed in your Shuttle PC yourself. So you know, there are many options for the home theater enthusiast that doesn't want to stream broadcast TV. They can do stuff themselves. They'll be fine.
just get all that, and then you can convert your linear broadcasts into DVR on demand stuff, and create a giant library of that stuff.
Yes, it's like hoarding newspaper clippings of the classifieds. Like, I good have fun with that, but. Let's move on, because I don't know why this is interesting, and something tells me that room temperature pineapple cider is not going to be amazing. So let's go faster.
Since it's clearly so much better when it's actually cold.
Oh, it's not even cold anymore.
that's unfortunate.
No, yeah.
Do you need to go get some ice?
No, I don't think I have any in the freezer, so. I'll just stare at this. Let's progress with things.
Is warm pineapple juice better or worse than the beet juice?
Well, this isn't actually pineapple juice. It's been fermented by a process, and then, you know, they made cider with it.
Is cider really a universal term, or does cider specifically refer to apples, and they're just kind of like throwing that in because they can?
I don't know, but it's America, so we can call it whatever we want.
Well, if we're gonna go throw down the America flag, I'm gonna say that the only American cider is apple cider, and the rest of it is a travesty and should be banned.
Why? Pear cider is good.
No, I disagree.
Have you had pear cider?
I have tried it. I stand on a platform of apple only cider.
Did you try that horrible woodchuck one that's sweet, or did you try a dry cider?
I think it was an Ace one. I wasn't a fan. Okay. I like all of the various apples. I'm not a fan of pears.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like pears with fruits, just not in my beverages.
Oh, right, right.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to our film for the evening, now that we've got
Are you sure you don't want to tell us some more about fruit from trees that turns into things that you like?
You know, we got some Fuji apples at the store a couple days ago, and I remember Fuji apples tasting like more than nothing.
They've always tasted like nothing to me.
But I thought that was Red Delicious is the ones that were completely flavorless.
Oh, Red Delicious is completely flavorless as well. But I don't know if there ever was a time that Fuji tasted like anything, but I find it to always be flavorless and kind of styrofoam-like.
I thought they were slightly underdeveloped or whatever. So, you know, you leave them for a day so they could sort of live up to their full potential. But they never became fully red. And the flavor is just essentially non-existent. So yeah, it is what did you say? Styrofoam, cardboard, somewhere in the middle there.
Is this
apple treat?
Okay, I'm gonna have to drop some knowledge here. Fuji apples don't turn completely red ever.
They just have this very sort of sad kind of mix of yellow red, and I know that there's supposed to be a little bit of that, but it looks like it gave up halfway through.
Okay, well it might have because apple when they pick apples and they put them into storage where they remove all the oxygen, and that lets them keep apples for longer. And that also makes them taste like nothing if they're stored for very long, I find. But that is just the way it is. Orange juice, they also remove all the oxygen, and then that really destroys the flavor, and they add in all the stuff that makes it taste like orange juice, and they have proprietary blends for each of the brands, Tropicana and Minute Maid, etc. And Minute Maid tastes like the devil's piss. So I don't like Minute Maid at all. But that's a thing.
Bringing it back around to pineapple juice. I'm a fan of the orange pineapple banana from, what was that, Tropicana?
Could be.
Or Dole. One of those two. One of those two. It's the one in the half hourglass shaped looking bottle.
Okay. So anyway, there might be a planet in the solar system that doesn't have apples, and that planet might be Mars, and maybe somebody might want to go to Mars. And so maybe we'll talk about a movie now, because let's just do that.
Well, the question is,
let's just do that.
The question is, which person actually wants to go to Mars, and which person is the one being convinced that he wants himself to go to Mars?
And did he go to Mars?
Or, yeah, so there. So what we're referring to is tonight's delightful film, Total Recall, starring Colin Farrell. Wait, do I have the right one? Did I watch the wrong one?
Dan, don't be stupid.
I think it's a little too late for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
1990s Total Recall, starring, apparently I can't say Total Recall.
No.
Starring Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes. You said car.
Total Recall.
Yes, that's totally different. There are cars in it.
Recar is where cars go when they're downtrodden and they can't afford it to fill up their tank to go on vacation. So they go get the memories of having gone on vacation.
Maybe that's how Johnny Cab gets through life. But the movie Total Recall starts with some weird scene on Mars, and we don't really get what's happening, and then he wakes up and he's in bed with Sharon Stone, and then we start with a breakfast and a wall that looks so real, and we start setting up key plot points here of how he wants to go to Mars and how he, you know, had a weird dream, etc. And Sharon Stone, totally not interested in Mars, would so much rather go to Saturn for some reason. And they leave it at that. He goes off to work, and she just sort of has a weird dead look in the door, and that's nice. And then we
I like how he didn't find it even remotely suspicious that she's like, you're talking about Mars again? Let's have sex, like every time.
Yeah, well, he's kind of brain damaged. let's be real. His personality's been scrambled, maybe. So, you know, maybe that's an excuse. Also, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger acting, and I don't know if you picked up on this, but maybe he is not qualified to act in this role to deliver these lines, because he's, oh god, it's so bad. Like, it's just, it's dreadful. You watch like Sharon Stone like deliver a line, and they're doing the shot reverse shot, and it goes between her and him, and you're just like, wow, he can't even like say something like halfway convincing to grab on to what she's saying here, and it's just so disappointing. It's one of the most disappointing parts of the movie, is that he's just a terrible actor when it comes to dialogue. It's like a dead fish.
Maybe what you're describing is what I felt when I was watching this. But aside from all of the absurd graphic violence in this movie, the rest of like the character stuff, especially his portion, kind of had this weird lightness to it, and not like in a like a fun way, but like he always had like a half smile on his face, is what it felt like when he was delivering his lines, and it didn't feel like it lined up quite with the gravity of just the exploding blood everywhere and the gunfire. And it was just kind of a weird feeling whenever he was around. Maybe it's just because he didn't really know how to handle the tone of his dialogue, but I don't know. There was something weird about just the character interactions in this movie that was a little too light for the rest of it.
I think everybody else is fine. I think whenever he's talking to anybody, it's just a problem. And even the character actors that they have in the film, you know, the doctor from Recall that goes to visit him on Mars and explains the situation, like, acts circles around Arnold. It's just kind of weird. But whatever.
It's pretty impressive he's able to manifest that single sweat droplet.
I don't want to like ruin anything, but I'm going to venture a guess that maybe he did not do that.
It was CG movie magic, wasn't it?
No, I think somebody just put a drop of water on him. But the movie, you know, sends him off to his job working on at a rock quarry or something without a hard hat.
They're just like in the middle of a construction site, just like pounding holes in the former concrete of a fallen building or something.
Yeah,
he's a nice, upstanding citizen who works construction with a jackhammer, and of course he flexes a lot while he's using the jackhammer because, you know, he can.
Yeah, well, and doesn't use a hard hat.
No, of course not.
Him and his friend. I'm looking around. And I'm just like, you know, you don't have to worry about Recall scrambling your brain. Like, you know, keep an eye out for things falling from the sky. You're gonna be pasty and dead. Just be careful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the concrete was below them with the jackhammer, so there's no worry there.
Yeah. Sure. So, you know, he gets the warning, like, don't go to Recall. They'll lobotomize you.
Don't mess with your brain, man.
Mm-hmm. And then he goes and he messes with his brain.
There was nothing suspicious about that line coming from his friend, too, where he said, don't mess with your brain, and then the camera just kind of hung on him for, you know, good 10, 20 seconds as he stared at Quaid.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's just like the Sharon Stone thing when she lingers in the doorway.
Sure. Yeah. Just absolute subtlety there in the edit.
Yeah, well, it's Paul Verhoeven, so subtlety is what
well,
he goes for.
It depends on which aspect we're talking about. Yeah, some aspects are very amplified, like using all of the blood squibs in the history of movies.
Yeah, I believe I had offered this question to you. It's just like, I don't know how many animatronic heads there are in this movie. All of them have something unfortunate happen to them. And then the rest of it is, like you're saying, just squibs, just blood squibs everywhere. Just so many. Like so much. I don't even know like if they had somebody who had to do the inventory and be like, are we going to have enough to make it through this film? And he's just like, I don't know, man. We have a factory working overtime, building things just for this film.
I mean, it was $65 yeah. million. Dollars. That buys a lot of squibs, but I got to think it was probably pretty tight in terms of the staff, the warehouse there just churning out as many squibs as they humanly could. I'm looking through the IMDb trivia right now to see if it mentions how many squibs were used.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a useful fact.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it doesn't. So, but moving right along, he goes to Recall. We get the cool nails, and then the...
Nice little reference from Fifth Element, or are those entirely separate ideas that they didn't steal from each other?
How could Total Recall have stolen?
No, the other way.
Okay, but the doesn't matter. The interesting thing here is, of course, Vertical Video is huge in the future of 1990.
so much 4x3 CRTs everywhere.
No, but didn't you see like the video phones? Like,
oh yeah,
they're all
oh, yeah.
they're all periscoping each other with landlines, and they
I
have.
I think they're gonna FaceTime. Periscope is one way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well they're FaceTiming with their vertical oriented things, and then like later on in the film, they have all these CRT monitors, like you're saying, but they like mask it so that they have a like I don't know if it is exactly 16x9, but like a vertical 16x9. And it's just like
it's the shape of a face.
Why,
I mean, why would you need
that?
A different why yeah. would you need a different aspect ratio? Because a face is vertical.
Yeah. So it is entertaining to me, you know, because of all the vertical video bashing and stuff that happens. Here are all these people with their vertical video on CRTs in the 1990s.
I like how
being cool before
it
was cool.
It's like an always on connection, but it's muted until you like hit the button and then the audio comes out.
Yeah.
That's a good user design there.
Mm-hmm. Well, if they had an Apple Watch, then they could probably unmute that faster.
Yeah, I mean, the doctor could have got down there. He wouldn't have had to interrupt his session with that woman. He could have just quickly glanced at his watch to see that that there was an issue downstairs, and he could have excused himself more gracefully rather than unmuting his video phone and hearing the scientist screaming at him that scared the woman away.
What's the smallest CRT TV?
I think my dad had one that was probably about 4 or 5 inches in diagonal.
Okay. Well, that's still not small enough for a wrist.
No, definitely not. No. It was one of those, like, radio/TV combos. Mm-hmm. The entire device itself was probably about 12 inches wide, maybe 6 inches high, and then, like, 15 inches deep with one of those antennas that periscoped off of it, like, 4 feet.
Yeah, my family had one of those, too. Yeah. It was just black and white. It had, like, a tuner knob. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Anyway, so
he could have worn one of those on his wrist if he was Arnold Schwarzenegger, because you know he's got those muscles, he can lift that.
Yes. And then they have the scene where he gets tucked into his little vacation package, and you know, wouldn't you like to be a spy? And he goes along with that. They start setting up, and they do the operation. Everything goes horribly wrong. And one of the things I really love is that the guy McLean calls her all kinds of horrible, nasty names, and it's just so rude to the lady that operates the machinery. And she takes it all in stride, and then her assistant comes up to her and says something, and she just smacks him across the face. I love that. Just that. Fury of striking out at that idiot intern guy or whatever.
I mean, what else are interns for?
Yeah, so they, you know, just dump him in a Johnny Cab and send him on his way. And Johnny Cab, so frightening.
Oh, you're talking about the animatronic or the idea of just being dropped into that little go-kart with a steering wheel?
I was specifically referring to the animatronics.
It is rather horrifying, isn't it?
Yeah, it has... It's not Uncanny Valley because it doesn't seem real, but it has that sort of like snarling, like mushy movement that just really is incredibly off-putting to watch.
If somebody told you to take like the animatronic bears at Chuck E. Cheese and turn it into a human with using only the materials you could find in a Chuck E. Cheese, that would be sort of what this thing looks like. It's like the opposite of Uncanny Valley. It's like Uncanny Mountain. It goes the other direction.
Mm. One goes one way, the other goes... Anyway.
It's, you know, you stick a torso with no legs... that just has very articulated lips and eyebrows and really nothing else in the driver's seat of your vehicle.
The eyeballs, because remember, he rolls his eyes.
Right.
Which is, I don't know why. I don't know why that's a feature.
Sarcastic robot, but it can't parse just drive, but apparently it knows sarcasm.
Just drive. No, but that's stupid. The whole thing's stupid.
I like that the Johnny Cab is controlled by a joystick. It's definitely not one of those little worker golf carts that you can buy disguised to look like a futuristic vehicle.
Well, that's what you need, a robot that operates itself. that you dismantle and then operate in its stead. It's very strange. But that doesn't happen until later. First, he goes back and he talks to... first, he goes back to his apartment, gets out, and then he has a confrontation with his buddy from the construction site, and then kills six people, and goes upstairs, and he's bleeding, and he talks to Sharon Stone, and...
Can we stop and try and unpack how his buddy from work knew that he went to recall?
I don't know.
Okay, that's good enough for me. I don't know either.
I have nothing to unpack.
He's like, you went to recall and did that thing. He's like, no, they didn't do it. He's like, yeah, I told you not to, but you did it anyway. He's like, well, you apparently seem more informed than we are. Why don't you tell us how you know all these things other than just trying to shoot him?
I don't know. Maybe he was following him or something, but it does raise the question of why he wouldn't have reported that, or why it would be a surprise to Sharon Stone or Michael Ironside, but whatever. Don't care. He kills him. It's Paul Verhoeven, so they all just die in gory, bloody death.
And Arnold Schwarzenegger essentially does the "I don't know my own strength" thing because he just fights back instinctively and he kills six guys with guns, which is sure that's what Arnold Schwarzenegger would do.
Well, it is what he would do. He's Arnold Schwarzenegger, sure. So I mean, like I said, he can't deliver any of his lines with the correct tone, but you know, this is what you hire him for.
Mm-hmm. WWASD.
Yeah. So, anyway,
Sharon Stone's doing hologram yoga or something.
No, it's like Wii tennis, but
oh right. She's taking tennis lessons in her living room.
Yeah, from a hologram, and it's so entertaining because it's not even in sync. But whatever, they do the thing, and he comes up there, and she's all like, "Oh, you're just just be a mistake, like not a big deal," and then. She's like, "I'm going to call a doctor." He's like, "Don't call anybody." And then she immediately calls somebody because, I mean, I don't even know how he didn't hear this from the bathroom because it's not like he was like taking a shower or anything. But Michael Ironside ominously standing in vertical
video. The best
part
was like from the moment she's like, she doesn't believe him, and he waits to the very end of the conversation to go, "Am I making up this?" And he holds up his hands covered in blood. It's like, why didn't you lead with the hands covered in blood? Maybe that would have been a little more illuminating for the seriousness of the situation.
Yeah, also, I would keep them outstretched at all times because you don't want to get blood on anything.
Sure.
Don't touch yourself. Yeah. But the...
I just picture you running in sort of like hands out in front of you, like going straight for the sink, like, ew, gross, I got blood on my hands.
Yes. Well, this is why I'm not an action hero, Dan.
This is literally the only reason why, your aversion to bloody hands.
Yeah. Even fake blood, but then the next thing is, you know, he washes his hands in 2 seconds and then puts the hands on his face. I hope he used soap in the scene that we didn't see because that's kind of gross. And then he turns around and goes into the completely darkened living room area of their apartment. And
right, it's suddenly very dark. Everything's in silhouette in the middle of the day.
Yeah. Well, she probably close the Venetian blinds or something, she somehow manages to be a trained operative who shoots the door frame all the way around him but not him in the doorway backlit.
Yes.
So
she's in silhouette. I mean, you know, for dramatic effect she had to be in silhouette, but that really reduces her her sight of him, so she's just kind of shooting in the dark for dramatic effect. And Arnold Schwarzenegger has no idea what's going on. He thinks it's somebody else and tells her to get out of there, even though it is her.
Yeah, well.
They do a great job of sort of leaving that a mystery. We had no idea it was going to be her with the gun.
Well, I believe he didn't know. I think even when they were shooting it, Arnold was like, oh, it was Sharon when the lights came on. I don't know if he was on board.
This is one of the several instances where the action gets just kind of hilarious because he's like one-on-one with Sharon Stone, like wrestling over the gun and like fighting. And it gives the appearance that they're almost evenly matched, like struggling over the gun. Whereby in like the previous scene, he literally just killed six people. And he's very large, especially in comparison to Sharon Stone. But he's apparently struggling against her. She must be just, you know, expertly trained in whatever martial art form that she is expertly trained in, aside from aerobic tennis or something. But I always laugh when I see him go one-on-one with some guy, and he's clearly three times their size, and he's actually pretending to struggle. It makes me laugh.
Yeah, well, I'm willing to buy it because she might have had enough training for this, whereas the guys in the lobby were clearly just hired muscle goons. They were not as sophisticated as she is. And I really like Sharon Stone in this movie.
Totally.
I think it... Recall-y. I think it is definitely one of those movies where it definitely benefits from her presence, which I don't usually say about Sharon Stone in movies.
No,
but
no. usually it's like 15% too much Sharon Stone. Mm-hmm. This one, she was right on the money. This was like the perfect character for her.
Yes, and she does a flawless job here. And I totally buy that she knows all of the kung fu that she is throwing at him and whatnots, and like that judo flip thing that she does, which it doesn't really seem to make any sense, but it happens. And they he gets away. He has the whole thing with Michael Ironside. Michael Ironside's tracking him, and we establish there's a tracker. And we have the blonde guy with the ridiculous glasses who carries the tracker.
Oh, man, that guy... They gave him all of the 80s gear. Like, he's got that one type of jacket that everyone wore in the 80s. He's got the giant glasses and the haircut. Mm-hmm. So spectacular.
Yeah.
And even Michael Ironside, he's got the tucked-in button-up shirt, wearing no belt and black jeans, and like a leather blazer. It's just spectacular clothing in this movie.
Michael Ironside is amazing. He doesn't have a character in this movie, but he's just Michael Ironside. And the whole thing goes on. He gets in touch with the former agent guy and gets the briefcase thing and goes to hang out with the rats.
Oh, yeah. That's what it was. The briefcase was the other instance where I started laughing because he's wrestling with that old lady over the briefcase that was left by the payphone.
Oh, that was so funny because she's like, it's mine.
It's a tug of war with this like 60-year-old lady over this briefcase. It's like, Arnold Schwarzenegger, you could just push her to the ground with like two fingers and you would be done with this.
Yeah, well, he does eventually just yank hard. She goes stumbles a little. It was one of those things where it was just like, I don't know why he decided to put that in the film. I can't imagine it was actually in the script. Maybe it was, but it just seemed like such a random moment. But it kind of lightens the tone, I guess, of this chase thing.
Well, it's supposed to heighten the tension, man. He's got to get down there and get that case before some rando stranger picks it up.
Yeah, except she's just a crazy old lady.
Some old lady. Yeah,
yeah. And so he goes off and he hangs out with the rats and feeds them whatever it is he's eating. And he has the giant CRT in the top half of that case thing.
That was spectacular. It's a silver briefcase with a rehoused CRT in it. With, again, wasn't it another sort of vertical display?
Yes, yes.
Oh my god.
It is so silly. And it had like that weird like half handle thing on it. It was just like, I don't know. Who was the production designer for that? But it was a thing that happened. And
that entire case these days would be replaced with one of those little wallets that you can put your iPhone in.
Mm-hmm.
Cuz what I needed, he needed like his passport, some red Monopoly money, and the video of himself.
And the extractor. And,
oh, of course, the extractor.
Yeah, and apparently the lady head thing was also in there. That's a spoil.
I like
to
think he picked that up at a pawn shop or something on the way.
Just a trinket at the airport. It was right next to the neck pillows. But
sure, neck pillows, robotic lady heads, whatever you need.
Well, for your traveling pleasure.
I mean, who doesn't just generally feel more relaxed on a train when you're wearing a robotic lady head?
Yeah.
I know I do.
Yeah, two weeks. But
two weeks.
2 weeks. But we'll get there. So the rats are dumb, and but the rats are there to set up the fact that we feed them a tracker later, and that's stupid.
The tracker, which, by the way, was way too large for a rat to even eat. It was like half the size of the rat, but sure, that's why they just kind of did those half shots where they were dragging the tracker and the food around. So.
Yeah, and then they shoot the rat, and it explodes in, like, the biggest blood squib of a rat ever that
sure
goes across the monitor.
Aren't you familiar with the anatomy of rats? They're like 2% teeth and 98% blood. It's just rats are just walking bags of blood,
Dan.
This is grossing you out.
This is an unpalatable conversation. So
tell me about it. We do it every week.
But so then we have our little transition to and then there's the animatronic head, the extractor thing for the capsule and whatever. I don't know how any of that anatomically works out, but it did. And
I found the gums to be the least believable part of that animatronic head.
Yeah, but weirdly enough, every time he has to do that weird grunting, shouting stuff, it goes perfectly in sync with whatever the robot's doing.
Sure.
It's a skill, really. But then they have the whole thing with the we get the thruster jet close up, and then it pivots to the shuttle landing on Mars. It's actually a nicely composed shot. It doesn't technically hold up very well because Mars looks like it's on a very small table.
You want to talk about miniatures? I don't want to jump ahead, but the device thing.
Mm-hmm.
Holy effing hell.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the shot where they walk up and they're looking over the vast area that houses the device. Just like, good Lord, this does not, this,
you know,
this is not the 4 years prior to, or 3 years prior to Jurassic Park world that I thought we were living in.
Okay, here's the thing. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to just say this, and it's going to be an unpopular opinion. A lot of people always lament not having practical effects. And I just want to say, go watch Total Recall. It's full of practical effects.
You and want practical effects? This is what you get, people.
Yes, exactly. I mean, it's one of those things where it's just like, CG is so cheesy. It's like, here's an animatronic head. Here's an animatronic head. Here's another animatronic head. Here's an animatronic baby thing inside of somebody's stomach. Here's some weird makeup that doesn't even look even like it remotely works. And they can't even blink. And then here's, you know, a bunch of miniatures, which look like they are miniatures. They don't, these are not miniatures where, we're like at the Independence Day level where it looks like, you know, the White House is exploding or something. Like this looks like what it is. It looks like it is a very small table, with some carved stuff on it, and some red lights. And that's what we got. Yep. So all of you people out there who are like, computers ruin everything, go watch this movie.
$65 million worth of miniatures.
well, that would be a lot of miniatures. But even on the Wikipedia page, they're like, oh, this is one of the last movies to make extensive use of practical effects. And this is 1 year prior to Terminator 2. And I just want to say, that's kind of a BS statement to make. Because there was plenty of practical effects that went on for the rest of the 90s and into the early 2000s that they use miniatures quite a bit, but the techniques for using digital compositing helped improve that and sell a lot of those things so that it wasn't quite so obvious when something was composited. Yeah,
generally, all that talk about using miniatures kind of misses the optical printer part where the matte lines are, especially in this movie, completely miserable.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there are the... One of the end of the movie has a lot of problems, which I'm sure we'll get to eventually. But like in terms of effects, when they have the mountain blowing off, like I don't know, liquid nitrogen, steam, vapor stuff out of
everything
it.
Everything in this movie is steam powered.
Yes. Well,
step off of the subway and there's like 12-foot gusts of steam everywhere.
Well, anyway, it happens, and all the windows blow out, and then they have the shot from inside the bar, where they're all standing around and looking out at the mountain. And the sky is sort of like bluish, kind of. But there are these matte lines that I swear to God must be at least like 10 pixels big. Like they're huge black lines all around everything. It's just like when you guys were going back in and going, oh, hey, let's remaster this movie for HD. Was somebody just like, hey, guys, it would take us like, I don't know, 5 minutes. Let's just go touch this up. No.
It adds to the charm.
Completely static lock-off shot because of the limitations of what they had back then. So it would take even, it's not even like it requires like a ton of work.
Yeah, that vinegar and baking soda mountain in the background there that was blowing off steam looked pretty damn impressive. No CG bullshit there.
Yeah, well, there is one interesting thing, though, in the end of the movie there, is that they have probably one of the more complicated shots where I've seen somebody use tiny little projectors on projection screens with a rear screen projection for all of the little people inside of the windows of the little miniature. And we have that big crane pullout shot, but it's not a big crane. It's a tiny crane because it's a miniature. But we have them stuck in all the windows because you couldn't just like track in photography of those people in windows, which is how you would do it now. You had to actually put photography of them in there. And so it is interesting that was done that way. And it certainly deserves some technical acclaim for what it was able to do in 1990. But it's one of those things where looking back on it now, like, you know, there's a reason why we use computers. That's all I'm going to say. It's a reason. People, you jerks.
It's because it does it all for us. It's way easier.
Yes, there's a button. And you just push make Mars, and then it makes Mars.
Push the make Total Recall button.
Yeah.
You push the baking soda button and the vinegar button, and then you got a volcano.
Yeah, and then you say, like, demure and whatever.
Brunette, demure, promiscuous? I can't remember what his other adjectives were.
Yeah, I don't know. So yeah,
needless to say, they weren't terribly flattering.
No, so just moving on. So
Ronnie Cox is angry.
Yeah, Ronnie Cox is very
surprise,
angry.
Surprise, surprise.
Ronnie Cox is good at being angry, he is, of course, one of the many carryovers from RoboCop to appear in this movie or to have worked on this movie, you know, he's good at what he does, that Ronnie Cox, and we have the whole thing of Arnold checking into his hotel and getting his personal effects or whatever. And then deciding to go to that.
I love that he had to borrow a Sharpie and write the word Melina on the paper underneath the other word just to make sure that it was his handwriting, because apparently he can't recognize his own handwriting.
Well, I mean, his brain theoretically has been chopped up 1,000 times, so, you know.
Yeah, but his handwriting could have been. Things like that would change.
Yeah, but his handwriting could have been forged. It doesn't matter. He goes to Last Resort. And Benny is the cab driver that takes him there. And we establish there are drills on Mars.
No jets.
Yeah. And then we establish that there are some unfortunate people who have been affected by poorly constructed domes. And that establishes the mutants, which were an idea of David Cronenberg's when he was working on this in an earlier stage of development before it left him and went off to eventually wind up with Verhoeven. He even came up with a Quato, who's in the film. So there's all that. I glossed over something. When there was the 2 week scene, when he was checking in at the airport.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, two weeks, et cetera. And there's a security officer there who appears a few more times, and that is Gul Dukat from Star Trek.
Oh God!
And I just want to point it out.
Yeah, always point it out.
Yes, he also played Gul Masset, the first Cardassian we ever see. But
I don't like that family.
Yeah, you don't watch a Gul of Thrones, but
the one on the E channel there, the Keeping Up with the anyway,
Keeping Up with the Gul Masets. But and so the I lost my train of thought. But anyway, he was in Star Trek, and I just wanted to point that out. And so now back from that to The Last Resort, and he's inside of the place, and he asks to see Melina, and the guy's like, oh, she's busy. You want somebody else? And then we get the gratuitous three upper chest person shot. So that's in there. I don't know why anyone would particularly find that appealing, but good for her. She's got her talents, I guess. And then he's like, no, I really want to have Melina talk to her. And then he goes off to the table where people are very cavalierly meeting in their bar in a totally not suspicious at all way. And Melina is all like, oh, you've been, you know, pumping up or whatever, and like gropes him. And then they go up to her room. On the staircase, there's the threat from pink slit face guy. Which is an interesting makeup choice.
You got a lot of nerve showing your face around here.
Yeah. Yep.
Reminds me of one of the sewer monsters or mutants from Futurama.
Yes, he does, indeed. I'm certain that there was much that was modeled on from this, because they were also the victims of horrible things. But
So the psychic mutants, which are sort of in this Mars air sector or whatever the hell they called it, and as well as this particular bar, do they really serve much of a purpose here?
I mean, Quado does later. No, I don't think so.
So the whole psychic mutant premise is really just set up just for Quado?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I mean, it might have been happening in some random story thread or something.
Well, I was expecting to get some of it out of Pink Slit Face Guy.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't ask him. But they go up to her room or something, I guess, and then they have their candid conversation. Of course, she smacks him because that's what you do. It's what you always do. Yeah, smack the guy. And she is very confrontational about where he's been, and he tries to explain where he's been in the poorest way he possibly can.
I'm not Hauser. I'm Quaid. They erased my memory.
I was married, but
not really.
Yeah, so stupid. It was not convincing.
So articulate.
Yeah, and so he leaves, and then there is the...
This is when he goes back to his hotel, and he's visited by the doctor guy, who tells him that he's dreaming, and all of this is just a dream. He's still in recall, and he's been sent in to get him to let off of the delusion or something? Like, I don't know... he was trying to talk him down and say, come back to your wife, Sharon Stone. Look, she's here. We brought her. We've been injected into your brain because it's all a dream and you're just going crazy. I don't know why they wouldn't just, like, unplug him from the recall machine or something. Apparently, you're not allowed to do that when they're having a something or other embolism or whatever they described.
Yeah, what was it? Like a schizoid embolism? But anyway, the... This scene is interesting because they're trying to sell him on the idea that it's not real. And by all accounts, a lot of things have happened so far in this movie that were described in the mission briefing, I guess you could say, of what his ideal Mars vacation would be.
Yeah, potentially a lot of coincidence in this movie if the guy's lying, or if he's telling the truth, I mean.
Yeah, but, you know, it's kind of beside the point. So either... he's being manipulated by somebody who's real, or he's actually being asked to go back to the real world. Either of these two things are possible, and he doesn't go. There is, of course, the red pill he's supposed to take as a symbol of his willingness to leave, and it's just like,
that was ridiculous.
Yeah, and so he sees the bead of sweat on the doctor, shoots the doctor in the head. Sharon Stone freaks out. And then the wall explodes. It's okay. The wall was just MDF. So you see little tiny bits and pieces of medium density fiberboard fly everywhere. And the cavalry comes in and hauls him off to, you know, be taken away through a long hallway with elevators. But then Melina shows up just in time and somehow manages to spray bullets only at the people that she needed to hit with her indiscriminate fire from her automatic weapon. And
of course. Then this is the whole this is the idea. I think I told you in the Slack or whatever. But this whole premise here with the you're in too deep, and if you don't follow us, you're going to fall off the ledge, and you'll never come back. And this whole idea of is he or isn't he dreaming, and this identity confusion stuff. This is the part of the movie that I find super interesting to think about, but it's pretty short. I mean, as based on the fact that we just went through the description of the scene that quickly, and it comes up, you know, a couple different places where they sort of double back on the plot, and it was the plan all along, or you're actually confused, or, you know, there's ambiguity about it. I like that stuff. There's interest there, and that's probably why there's you know, a number of movies throughout the years that have played off this sort of dream identity kind of what's real, what's not idea. But I really like this stuff, and I wish there was more of it in this movie.
Well, I don't think Paul Verhoeven is the one to do it, but
what about whoever directed the other one?
Which other one?
The 2012.
Oh, Len Wiseman? Definitely not. That one. If you're saying you like this stuff in here, you will be wanting this even more over that one, because there is less.
Oh, he's the underworld guy. Yeah, no.
Yeah,
no.
Kate Beckinsale's husband.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll get to that later.
But you know what I mean? It's kind of like this Matrix-y. What was the other one that came out around the sort of the same time as Matrix? 13th Floor. Did you ever see that one?
No. Well, I might have, but I don't remember it. But you know, it's based very loosely on a short Philip K. Dick story. And he wrote a lot of times about whether or not things we were perceiving were reality and whether or not that definition mattered. And you know, that the way things unfold here in the film is of course very different from what it was in the short story, but there's another book of his called Ubik, and it plays very heavily with what is reality, and whether or not he's inside of a fantasy, or whether or not stuff is really happening to him. And there's other times it pops up. Not all of his work is very good or very well thought out, but it is thought provoking in certain ways. And and so you know, it's nice in that way. But
I guess Inception would be the other example that people would sort of go to for more modern take on that. But what does that sort of thing stick with you? Are you as intrigued by that as I am, or is it just sort of something to set up this movie and we should move along?
Well, in the case of this movie, I don't take it seriously. I think it's one of those things where it's just like I can't believe it in this film that it is one way or the other. So I just watch the events unfold.
I'm good with that. Yeah, I kind of feel like we're sort of on the side of Schwarzenegger, and what he is thinking and feeling is what we're meant to be thinking and feeling. You know, I never really questioned at the end of the movie the whole, was it all a dream the whole time anyway? You know, there's obviously that sort of, it's awfully convenient that the things that are happening are pretty much what he ordered in his recall package there. But I think that's kind of why this is the movie that it is, because it's this one in a million coincidence that the guy did have his memory erased and this is where he came from kind of thing. But I do find this idea thoroughly fascinating. And I think I also mentioned to you, like, I can see why they wanted to reboot this. And I clearly, from your experience, they didn't do it very well there either. But I do like this idea a whole lot. And I can't quite divorce myself from that idea and the execution in this movie, which is fun and silly and what have you, but doesn't really address it quite as much as I had hoped.
Yeah, let's talk more about. I have a whole thing about stuff I want to say about the sequel, but we'll just do it later. So they capture him. Melina takes out everybody, and then has her girl on girl fight with Sharon Stone. And Melina is obviously trained very well because she's going toe-to-toe with Sharon Stone, who was going toe-to-toe with Arnold. So,
and she's a spy. I mean, maybe prostitutes on Mars have different training, but that was pretty impressive.
Yes. By the transitive property, she's as good as Arnold then.
Sure. The transitive property of prostitutes?
No, by a transitive property of Sharon Stone. Get your mind out of the gutter.
Mm-hmm. Technically, we could reclassify Sharon Stone's profession based on what she's actually paid to do.
That's Dan.
Well, it upsets Michael Ironside. He punches Arnold Schwarzenegger because of it.
Anyway, so Melina...
So we go on the Temple of Doom ride, running away.
Yeah, Melina gets him, and then there's much chasing and much running. and there's much more chasing and much more running. And they go and they meet up with Benny again and go back to the bar in a tunnel car chase. He goes along with them when they go through the secret passage. And Michael Ironside demonstrates that he's a jerk face.
he's not messing around.
But one of the things I love about the secret passage, though, is like he just reaches up and hits something off screen, and then the squares in the wall open up, and then they go through it, and they close it, and then they put that table in front of it, and they seat those people there. It's so funny.
I particularly like
it was like somebody was going to notice that was a door before.
Sure, it was completely seamless, but just in case that Michael Ironside was going to walk around knocking on the door, on the wall, looking for a door, they had to put the table there. But I loved that Arnold Schwarzenegger paused in the doorway long enough to say, like, thank you, and then, like, slowly make his way through the door. It's like, you're in a hurry. Just dive through and let him close the door, for the love of God.
Yeah. And so they go through their catacombs. They go run out, see that the sector has been sealed off, and go through the catacombs. Ronnie Cox stops all the air flowing into the place, and that's going to slowly kill them. And by slowly, I mean literally. They'll be fine until the end of the film.
It must have been just a very large sector, or they all breathed very gently.
Yeah. Or something. I don't know. Who knows how much air was actually caught up in whatever it is. It's like we had like an actual square footage or something, or the volume of the space and the number of people. So, you know, I'm sure somebody's tried to do that math, but it's not us. And so they go through the catacombs, and Benny, you know, they all get captured by the resistance, and Benny reveals that he is also a mutant with his hand that detaches, and then there's his mutant hand. Then they go off to meet with Quatto. We see the same guy from before who was at the bar, and he walks off with Quaid to the back room, and the door shuts, and the guy's like, oh, Quatto will be along shortly. He's on his way. And then we get the whole, like, seizure thing and then the stomach baby thing. Animatronic mucus covered thing. So that was a thing.
I don't think the mucus was actually animatronic.
No. It was covered in whatever that is, like the cellulose stuff or whatever that they just covered everything in the 80s.
Sure. Everything's very shiny.
Yeah. Whenever you had an animatronic, like, monster alien thing, you just took the latex and you covered it in goo. Because that was the style at the time. And the...
Son of a bitch.
Yep. So we get the whole thing, and we get the psychic journey of him revealing the secret that he knows via this telepathic method. And it turns out that there is apparently a giant alien reactor thing. Which was hinted at with alien artifacts and stuff on Mars, but nobody really knew the audience for sure didn't know the extent of whatever it was going to be that was going to be revealed, or whether or not it would have anything to do with the aliens that they brought up several times. Sure enough, totally has a lot to do with the aliens. Yeah. Ronnie Cox doesn't want anybody to know about the thing. And so that's their mission. And then there's some shaking and a drill breaks through the wall.
I have, you know, it may seem unnecessary to nitpick this particular nit, but this whole flashback memory thing that Quatto does with him, it's like this disembodied camera flying around through the alien ruins and over Ronnie Cox's shoulder and under the floor and all over the place. And it's like, wait, was Hauser able to fly before, or where is this memory coming from? Because... that's not how he should remember things.
It's part of the vacation package, Dan.
Part of the vacation package is he could fly.
Yeah, I don't know, Dan. it's one of those things where whenever we have somebody's dream or a flashback or their memory or whatever, it always turns out to conveniently be from a third-person account, specifically whatever footage they had previously shot. In the case of this, it wasn't reusing footage, since we never saw it before, but this was definitely shot as if we were in an omnipresent kind of situation like we are for the rest of the film. So no, I don't think it's his memory. I mean, you could say some cockamamie BS about how, you know, it was it was sort of an assembly of things from his mind that were visiting, and so that's why you're seeing it in the third person, because you're not actually him interacting with it, and that the mind is just filling in the empty spaces or whatever. But I don't care. It's just revealing, hey, there's an alien air reactor here, and that's a secret, and ta-da!
Alien air reactor. They're the ones that did that Michael Jackson cover a couple years ago, like back in the early 2000s.
I think you're thinking of Alien Ant Farm. Mm-hmm. Well, that was nice. So the drill breaks into the wall, and then they run out into the other room to tell everybody that there was a giant drill that shook the room and made a giant noise, which they were oblivious to. 10 feet on the other side of that door.
I mean, there's so many drills going off at every given moment on Mars, so they can't be certain which ones are bad guys and which ones are just, you know, arbitrary drills drilling holes through walls.
Yeah, just casual drilling.
Yeah, gotta expand the sector.
Uh-huh. That's what something... Anyway, so they're all in trouble, and it turns out that they need to run away. And so Quado and Benny and Melina and... Quaid go running off, and then they go into a room where Benny completely kills Quado. And it's revealed that Benny's not a nice guy and was a bit of a traitor.
And he was working for the man the whole time.
Yeah, and he does not even have any kids. He's not even married.
Yeah. Oh, because that's the fourth callback to that joke.
Yeah, well, and... You know, he goes on to be a traitor in Star Trek Deep Space Nine, where he also plays a Cardassian, and he is Broca. And he was the last Legate, and he was put in charge after Legate Damar defected. And he was loyal to the Founders, but he was blamed for being a traitor and killed. Spoiler alert, Dan.
Why in case I just ruined Deep Space Nine
for you.
Oh, yeah. You ruined it for me.
Yeah.
I'll never be able to watch it now.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so then we're back with Ronnie Cox. Good old Ronnie Cox. And this is where we get the reveal that this was his evil plan all along. Somehow.
This is where the train jumps the rails for me.
Yeah, well, see, I know you're having a hard time with this yesterday, but I'm fine with it. Because it's one of those things where it's just like, sure, why not?
Why bother fighting, Mr. Quaid? This was our plan all along. In fact, it was your plan. Let me have you tell you why this was your plan, and then the camera will zoom out ever so slightly, and I will creepily step into the frame so you know that was the case all along.
The camera wouldn't have had to move if they didn't shoot it vertically. But the... silly. But
he just sort of awkwardly shuffles in and sticks his head. He's like, hey, buddy. We're both here.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's definitely not lying.
No.
He should have said like, I don't believe it. That's photoshopped.
Well, I mean, you can make totally accurate holograms of people and robotic heads. So, of course it's totally real. But this is one of those things where I know you're having a hard time with this reveal, because that would mean that he was being chased by people who were trying to kill him for, you know, reasons that didn't make a lot of sense.
And he erased his own mind, and we've double-backed on the plot like four times. But yeah, anyway.
Yeah. And apparently...
And he would have gotten away with it if it wasn't for himself and those that main meddling kids.
Mm-hmm. That meddling Quada. Because he's dead. And that happened. And they are going to give Quaid his memories back now. And so they take him off to the convenient little total recall memory room thing they have there.
Well, they just happen to have two of the recall booths.
Yes. Well, it's a good number. It's more than one. And then they put Melina and Arnold in, and he's all like, oh, remind them that they're invited to a party later that I'm throwing. And he's like, peace out.
We're going to put your memories back so you're a bad guy again, and we're going to erase Melina so she can be your slave or something.
Yeah, it seemed like a weird goal. It's like, if you're going to cover up your stuff, why not just kill her? Because, you know, she could just as easily as Arnold have, like, memories leak or something. So,
well, Hauser is Cohagen's best friend, and he wants to give his best friend the stuff that he apparently wants, which is disturbing.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's probably safe to say Cohagen has a little bit of a god complex, since he basically runs Mars.
Yes.
Is he president of Mars? What would his title be?
I don't know. I think it was one of those, like, development board things. Like, I think he's just in charge of, like, the thing for the company.
I'm saddened that the Mars air hoarding company didn't have a cool name like OCP, or at least a cool logo everywhere.
Yeah, I don't know if there was an actual entity of it or whatever. He's just... They just always refer to him as a person instead of as a company thing. So,
He probably would have wanted to incorporate or at least file an LLC just so he has some sort of protection when he eventually gets sued.
Yeah, I mean, sued for what? He seems like such an upstanding guy.
You know, you withhold some air or something, you know, an airlock inadvertently misfires and a bunch of people die. You might want to protect yourself from that. Just at least, you know... Like I said, at least a limited liability corporation.
Yeah, I love that phone call he gets when he's in the recall room. They directed in there, and the guy's like, "We're almost out of air in Sector G. They're gonna die." And he's like, "Yeah, it's fine. Just let them die." And then just like, "But they're gonna die." And he's just like, "Yeah, totally fine with that."
It's like, "Yeah, why do you think I did that?"
Yeah,
we didn't turn off the fans in the hopes that like they would be overjoyed.
Yeah, and then of course we get the usual. Lazy writing of you got me, let her go, blah blah blah. It's one of those things. It's just like you capture a guy and a girl, and then the guy's always gonna say, "You got me, let her go," and it's just one of those frustrating things.
It's chivalrous, Joe. That's the word you're looking for.
I don't know. If we had like a men's rights activist, you know, in this movie, then maybe it would make a little more sense. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, if there's any way to describe Douglas Quaid. It would not be.
As a men's rights activist.
Not at all, no.
I don't, this is a red herring. Red Mars herring. But they have the whole thing here where he pulls out the whole armrest and then uses the spike from the armrest to impale the guy on the neck, and then there's just blood everywhere. And then there's the most ridiculous fight that ensues, where he frees himself, and then he's just like killing people left and right with like pieces of metal that he finds. and it's not just like they're wounded or they fall over or something, but like he sticks that metal bar through someone's head, like clear through someone's head. It's just so gratuitous.
It's quite horrifying, actually.
Yeah, it is. It is so beyond what Verhoeven did in RoboCop. That it is actually kind of strange that it was just like, you know, was he aware of what he was doing, or was no one looking over his shoulder and being like, Paul, no, Paul, stop.
It's one of the instances in this movie, the rare instances where the blood is probably on par with what actually would happen if you actually did that to people. But that should have been the clear signal that this is just way, way too much. And it was just he went full Hulk and just kind of just his brain turned off, maybe because it was still partially in the recall machine. And he was just ramming a piece of rebar through people's heads, which was just whoo.
Yeah, it was stupid. And so he kills everybody, gets Melina, and they leave. And then on the way to Sector G, it's just like, oh, no, we actually have to go do this other thing. Because if we turn on the reactor, then we'll save everyone. And so they make their way to where he thinks the reactor is.
We missed one part where Cohagen and Michael Ironside go back to his office. And he's like, you got to make a decision. What are we going to do? He's like, yeah, I guess you're right. Kill him. Like, for apparently they decided that even though they're putting his memories back, they're going to kill him. And Cohagen's so unhappy about it, he kicks over his fish tank, and we get some nice close-up shots of his fish dying on the floor.
Well, that's nice because they dissolve to the mutants and patrons dying in the last resort bar from that.
So it's a metaphor cut, is what you're saying.
Yes.
That's some clever capital F filmmaking right there.
Mm-hmm. So
just goes to show what like a giant jerk he is that he was willing to kill innocent little goldfish.
Yeah, well, I mean, more specifically, Paul was willing to kill innocent little goldfish. Poor guys.
I didn't watch to the end of the credits to see if there was a no fish were harmed in the making of this movie.
I didn't see that. Maybe they were, maybe they weren't. Maybe they were all rescued before anything really bad happened.
If not, this is probably the reason that is at the end of all movies now.
Yeah, but so anyway, goldfish, not the crackers. And then they go to the tunnel that seems sealed up, and then there's the drill that turns on, and oh no, they're cornered, and it's Benny, who somehow found them by chasing after them and finding a drill and sneaking up on them with a drill. And then they are being attacked by a drill where there's little convenient cubby holes for them to hide in between. And
random equipment for him to pick up and attack the drill with.
Yeah, well, and then he like knocks out that line or whatever that was full of fluid that powered stuff.
Apparently hydraulic fluid looks like motor oil.
It doesn't, and I've been given to understand that it's under so much pressure and it's also so toxic that it would actually quite injure Mr. Schwarzenegger if that was actually hydraulic fluid that had shot out of there.
Yeah, and hydraulic lines don't have that sort of like corrugated kind of just like pool tube look to them.
Yeah, but you know what does?
Props.
Yes.
Well, of course, he stalls the drill long enough to deliver his fantastic line, screw you, Benny, as he literally drives the drill through the door and into Benny's chest.
Yes. And this is one of the few times where we don't actually see somebody die on screen, which is saying something for this film.
We see him a good couple seconds of him having a drill ram through him.
No, we see the drill go in the side of the tank, but then we see his reaction shot, and then we cut to the outside of the drill.
Yeah, I mean, he's just kind of flailing in there. We're implied that, you know, it's...
No, but that's what I'm saying. It happens off screen.
Sure.
Do you know what screens are, Dan?
I'm aware. It's those vertical things with heads on them.
Yes, exactly.
Sure.
So it happens off screen, and then the drill, like, had broken through to the cavern thing on the other side, and they go in and they have the music and the thing of the, you know, glacier, and he knows it's a glacier. It's under a mountain.
The entire center of the planet is ice, and the machine turns the ice into oxygen.
Yes, none of this is true. And so they have the stuff, and then they go up the catwalk and whatever. And, you know, for a secret, it does seem like it required a lot of human construction in order to set up all of the, like, the catwalks and the gantries and the little lights on C-stands and everything they have going on here, the construction
equipment. You don't think the catwalk was alien?
Yeah. No, because it was all, like, that yellow metal earth stuff.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the elevator, too. So it was some earthlings put this together. But yeah.
Well, next time they should put the elevator a couple feet further away from the edge of the rock face, just for Michael Ironside's sake.
Yeah. 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 Well, you know, who knows what they had to work with? It was probably within tolerances. And they have the holographic wrist thing, which they had shown, like, what, 40, 50 minutes earlier in the film and not done anything with yet, so let's bring that in. And then they go...
You know what they say, if you put a holographic wristwatch on the mantle in the first act, you're not going to invoke Chekhov's law?
No, you just did.
No, but I say that part, and then you say the Chekhov's... That's our shtick. We do that. Have you heard this show before?
Chekhov's law of shows?
Oh my god, what has happened to this show?
I don't know. I'm tired. It's pineapple stuff. So Chekhov's law of holographic wrist thingies, and they have the gunfight where there would have been so much crossfire and ricochets and stuff that everybody would have died. And so that happens, and Michael Ironside and Arnold have their fight on the elevator, and Michael Ironside is disarmed.
Quite literally.
Yes, I know.
His arms are cut off.
Do you know how long I've been waiting to say that?
Since 1990.
No, of course not. But so the arms are cut clear off, and then he has the whole thing of he's going to go turn on the device, and then Ronnie Cox shows up.
Wait, can we back up for 1 second? What does he yell at Michael Ironside after his arms get cut off? Something like, see you at the party?
Oh, yeah.
What?
See you at the party, pal. Yeah.
Of all of the clever lines to say to somebody who just got their arms cut off by a rock face there, he couldn't come up with anything better?
I don't know. When you're stuck between a rock and an elevator, you get a...
See, you've come up with two already.
Yeah.
And you've been drinking pineapple alcohol.
Well, I know, but I'm no Arnold Schwarzenegger. But anyway...
Do live in Los Angeles.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a prerequisite.
And to be fair, everything. I have never seen both you and Arnold Schwarzenegger in the same room at the same time.
You probably never will.
See? This furthers my thesis that you might actually be Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That's fascinating. Okay. And then, so Ronnie Cox has dramatic lighting and a gun. And he's all like, oh, the aliens never turned it on because they knew it was going to blow up the planet. It does raise a couple questions about why the aliens had this and never turned it on, because it seems like a lot of construction for something you would never use. But whatever. It's beside the point. And then the...
Maybe they just dropped it off as they were passing through. It's like a Genesis bomb that they just didn't turn on, or they forgot to.
Yeah, maybe it was like a test.
It was just like, hey, we're going to leave this here. We got a bunch of these extra pyramid-looking things that make atmospheres, and we just need to get one off our ship because it's kind of weighing us down. And we need more room for, like, fajitas or something. So let's just drop this off on this planet because they could use an atmosphere. And if anyone ever shows up later, they can push the button.
Well, maybe it was hot merchandise, and they had to get rid of it. They had to offload it.
Sure. I mean, that would explain why they buried it inside of a mountain.
Yeah. With
because I can't possibly think of any other reason why it would be inside of a mountain.
And then turned the core of an entire planet to ice that shouldn't be ice. But whatever.
Now, if the entire core of the planet was ice and they turned that into air, wouldn't the planet be hollow and then just collapse on itself?
Yeah, hell of a sinkhole. And so yeah, it's not – when he says that line, I just have to assume that maybe he just doesn't have a full grasp of what he's saying.
He's not familiar with ice.
Yeah. Or that maybe he was misinformed.
He's misinformed on the chemical properties of ice.
No, he was misinformed about how much of it was ice, because it doesn't make any sense that it would be, or that a device would use all of it to do this thing, but whatever. And so there's the little thing and the explosive, and that blows the hole off the hatch.
Oh, right, the toaster bomb. Can't forget the toaster bomb.
Yeah.
It's like they completely ran out of money when it finally came time to build the bomb, so they got a little shoebox and painted it black.
Yeah. Well, they wanted a red shoebox, but then they had to paint it black. But nothing?
Is that a Rolling Stones joke?
So they all are getting sucked out of the hole, and stuff's getting sucked out of the hole. And then Arnold does the hand thing. And then there's somebody drew some light beams. And then the thing
turns on. Well, we can't skip over Ronnie Cox dying out in the non-atmosphere prior to the device being turned on, because evidently it takes an incredibly long time to die in a vacuum.
Well, it's not a complete vacuum.
Mars isn't a complete vacuum?
It is not. It is very low density, though. Your head does not turn into an animatronic, and then your eyes bug out of it like that. But bad things do happen to you, because it's not Earth atmosphere, but it's not a complete vacuum. It's not space.
I found it rather implausible that, A, it took a very long time for Ronnie Cox to die, and B, the effects of this lesser atmosphere are reversible as long as an atmosphere develops in time.
The reversible part amuses me because there's not even like a drop of blood or anything.
Sure, like your eyes and your tongue stretched like three times their size, but they'll just go right back where they were.
Yeah, everything's fine. Like literally, everything's fine. They're just like looking at the sky and like, oh, this is great. And they make out. It's just like, did you not see yourselves like 10 seconds ago?
Hey, look, clouds. Those are pretty.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's so strange. But they have the whole thing here. Of this very long protracted death scene for Ronnie Cox, and then the device turns on, and then oh it looks like Arnold and Melina are gonna die, and then the gas starts shooting out of the vents in the baking soda model, and then the whole thing, like the atmosphere, starts to fill up with blue stuff because it's how it all works. Don't pay any attention to it, and the windows on the buildings blow out from the pressure change and the shockwave of the atmosphere, and then it's completely normalized across all of the planet, I guess, or something, or at least enough that they're okay. I don't know the mechanics of this device, so it just happens. And then we get all of our optical mat lines, and then everybody goes and steps out on the little rear screen projection parts, and then there's the miniature shot, and then there's the blue screen shot of Arnold and Melina together, like making out with the flare behind them. Because you know, it's one of those things where you can make fun of that, but that would literally happen even to this day in a 2015 movie. People would just make out and there would be a flare. It would just be done with computers and stuff and like not have edges. But it is the kind of like cheeseball thing that you could expect. And then, do we know if it's real or not? No, we don't know. It's the dreidel didn't stop spinning, but it did wobble. And then that's the end of the film, and then more music from Jerry Goldsmith.
It wasn't a dreidel. Yeah. I love that, you know, I was kind of in my mind hoping that when he activated the atmosphere machine, it was going to be like, great, thank you for turning on the atmosphere. You will have air on your planet in T-minus 7 days. Thank you. And then he would have been like, oh, crap, and then everyone dies.
There's not that much time left in the movie, Dan.
Yeah, I know, but like I was, you know, how long would it realistically take to turn ice into an atmosphere for a planet the size of Mars? I think it would be more than like 40 seconds. So I was kind of laughing at the idea that they finally succeed in turning it on, and maybe they just all die while they're waiting for the air to come out.
I'm sorry, you got all the way through this movie and you're like, that's the implausible part?
No, I started writing fan fiction in my head. I started doing a rewrite in my head at that point in the movie.
Yeah, well, what you really need to do is have something called the fall. And then, God. Okay, so this is the part where I'm going to briefly recap the horrible 2012 remake, which I think is a travesty. It is a total squandering of the intellectual property, IP, as they say, that they had, and the goodwill of fans and everything. It's just like this, the film that they made was garbage. It is 100% total garbage. It is very similar to the RoboCop remake, which they also made, two Paul Verhoeven remakes, which are remade poorly together by Columbia Pictures. So good job, Dips. You made a mistake twice, and the whole thing is they don't go back to the source material. They go their own direction, and there's some stuff from the movie in there, and then there's some other random stuff that they had, like, oh, we got some crazy ideas about robots and an elevator that goes through the planet, so we'll just put all this stuff in here, and here's a bunch of stuff about Australia and the United Kingdom, but Bryan Cranston runs the country. Because, sure, why not? And Bill Nighy has no English accent, because that's also weird. Everything about the movie is so distracting and strange, and it's constructed so poorly. And the few callbacks that they have in here to the original film just make you angry that you're not watching the original film. There's the 2 weeks thing. There's a little surprise with that, but it just makes me angry because the scene that they replace the 2 weeks scene with is poorly executed in that it just turns into a quick little action thing and is over in 2 seconds. So it's just, it's
I think stupid. I saw at least that far in the movie. He's got a hologram head or something, right?
Yeah, yeah. Like, they have the lady walk through, and she's got the yellow coat, and we're like, oh, it's going to be her. Like, she's talking to the guy and says 2 weeks, and then he's stuck in the little ID inspector thing, and his head starts changing, and they're like, oh, it was him all along, and it wasn't the lady. But then there's just shooting and guns and running.
They didn't have the cool giant X-ray wall in the new one, did they, where it's just skeletons fighting each other?
No. No, they didn't. And it's just so sad, like, that they made this thing so poorly. it's really not very well put together. And there's a lot of things in here where it's just... With Paul Verhoeven, I don't see the influences that made Paul Verhoeven make the movies he makes. When I watched the Total Recall remake, I could see all of the influences that were acting upon Len Wiseman, like the flares that were like leaking in from the sides of the camera lens. Like, where have we seen that before? Couldn't have been 2009's Star Trek movie, because you just wouldn't have had total random anamorphic looking flares just constantly peeking into frame. And then there's all of the nonsense with the colony, where it's apparently raining all the time, even though it wouldn't have been like that in the deserts of Australia where this thing was supposed to be. But the whole thing just didn't make any sense. And the city's actually more like Blade Runner than it is like anything at all, really, original. And it's just frustrating. Because you just see this melange of ideas that went into this thing, and what came out the other side is just crap. And Jessica Biel, while in the original Total Recall, my criticism was on Arnold's acting capability. In the remake, my criticism centers on Jessica Biel. Like, Colin Farrell does a great job at what he's doing with the material he has.
At furrowing his eyebrows and looking angsty?
Yes, and leaving his mouth partway open at all times. And
it works for In Bruges, but I don't know about Total Recall. No,
but I mean, that's his face. That's the face he makes. It's his thinking face. But anyway, I had less. Honestly, that's still like outclasses Arnold's acting in Total Recall. But Jessica Biel, playing the Melina character, different name though. She is not good. She's really just genuinely not good. She's generic and bland and boring. Kate Beckinsale is fantastic because she's always fantastic. Even when she's in complete dreck, like roses.
Jessica Biel's character is Melina.
Oh, I thought her name was... Oh, no, it was Kristen in the original short story, and it was Melina in both of the movies.
Ah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Kate Beckinsale. I'm struggling to remember an instance where I've seen Jessica Biel in a role where I liked her.
Crickets. Can you put in a cricket sound effect here? It's so bland. And then the robots thing, it's just like, why do we have this subplot? And then it's all about getting an excuse to go invade the colony with robots and kill everybody. Like, none of this stuff makes any sense. In the Total Recall movie in 1990, it made a lot more sense that, you know, there was a power structure that was controlled on Mars where it would upset the order of things if, you know, there was oxygen on the planet. And as implausible as, you know, traveling to another planet and aliens are, an elevator that shoots through the core of the planet is even dumber. And the stakes are lower because it's Earth. And it's not even a great Earth. And it's like what Bryan Cranston hopes to accomplish by like crushing everyone in Australia. I have no idea. The colony, as they keep referring to it. It's all pretty ludicrous. It's what it is. That's the movie as it exists. And so I put myself through watching that. And honestly, if I was on a plane and I had to, you know, flip through channels or something, I would have picked something else like 10 minutes into that. It was so bad.
But it was shiny and dark or something, wasn't it?
It's very shiny and very dark and very contrasty and very flary and highlights everywhere. and glowing displays and tracking in glass projection things. I mean, it has just a lot of stuff. None of it is interesting. And, you know, that's coming, you know, you're saying that about a movie that's been remade 22 years after the original, where there have been dramatic leaps forward in movie making technology and in the film vocabulary of what you can expose audiences to. And we just have this sort of generic pile of parts. And I just, I hated it. It was just deplorable. It was total waste. Not a Total Recall, but a total waste. Aha! But I can't recommend it. And I think it was just, like, not even to, like, watch as, like, a joke, to, like, to be like, oh, haha, those people, look at them. Like, I wasn't laughing. That was just bad. But I felt like I should watch it because I had watched RoboCop, the sequel, after we had done the podcast. And if I had seen it before, I would have ranted for probably 30 minutes about that one. Because it's so terrible. That, I think, it's debatable which is worse. Both of them squander what the originals did. And both of them have weird callbacks to the original movie that make you wish you were watching the original movie. Bleh.
It's fair to say both remakes, RoboCop and Total Recall, are shortly going to be due for another reboot, whereby somebody might actually get them right.
Oh, I'm sure they're already in development. What was funny is I was reading the Wikipedia page for the Total Recall remake, and was it like Neil Moritz, the producer, was like, yeah, if there's enough audience interest, we're going to go ahead with a sequel to this one. Crickets. it was not well reviewed or profitable, I think.
First of all, how would you even... What could possibly be the sequel to a movie about this guy who discovers that he had the identity erased or whatever? Well, I mean, obviously it's different.
What, you mean like the Bourne identity and how there haven't been any sequels about that?
That's slightly different because there was unfinished business that you were aware of in the first one. But what more could he learn about it? I'm not even going to open it up because we'll be here for another 3 hours.
No, it's fine. But the original Total Recall was actually going to have a Total Recall too, and it was going to adapt Philip K. Dick's story Minority Report to be the follow-up, where Arnold Schwarzenegger would have played the main character role, and it would have been about him transitioning to a role as a law enforcer, and what the clairvoyance and stuff would have had to do with it. And then that went into development hell until Spielberg made his Tom Cruise version. So that goes to show you that things happen.
Well, I'm glad Minority Report never featured Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes, that would have been sad.
Yeah, it would have. Like I said, I still really enjoy the concepts behind this movie, and I'm sad to hear that they were completely abused and wasted in the reboot. But I enjoy thinking about this movie I enjoy thinking about some of the concepts in this movie until I think about the extent to which Hauser tricked himself and erased his own memory in order to help him get on the inside of some woman he already knew, but apparently didn't trust him enough to show him the secret portal in the back of the bar that once he finally gets through there and they kill Quato, then he'll reveal to himself that he was a bad guy all along, but was he a bad guy or was it a dream and all of that nonsense. So, but aside from being absurdly bloody and kind of ridiculous at times, it's still a fun movie to watch. However many years later.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that you can definitely say about the 1990 movie versus the 2012 movie, and that it's definitely not afraid to have fun with it. And you know, despite the gratuitous violence and the silly prosthetics and the animatronics and stuff, it is enjoyable in its sort of crassness and it's sort of simple humor, and it is what it is. It's not a while it has the lines in here about, you know, what is reality and stuff like that. It's not a movie that's taking itself seriously about what is reality, like you're saying. So it makes it a lot easier for me to enjoy it. as opposed to the second one where they had the same questions about whether or not he was experiencing reality, and it was just stupid.
Fair enough. You wanna wrap a towel around our heads and button this one up?
I don't think you should say that. Let's
like in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Let's pop our memory caps.
Right, that's a thing that they said, which I still don't understand.
Yes.
Apparently his memories are bottled up inside of his head.
Mm-hmm. With a cap. It's for freshness.
Tonight I'm gonna have myself a real good time. I feel alive. Star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity. I'm a racing car,